In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.
What's poppin', everybody? Hello and welcome to Popcorn Culture. My name is Ben Carlin, and I am your host. Here with me today is my brother Jay, who will be in every episode.
And having an epic time, no doubt.
I see what you did there, because yeah. We just got back from the one, the only Epic Universe. Yeah, what a wild trip.
It was a action-packed trip. If you haven't heard, somehow, Universal Studios down in Orlando, Florida, has just opened a brand new theme park, Epic Universe, and it is a unique theme park in that it is made up of like a central hub location called Celestial Park, and then there are like four spokes that come off of it into different fandom themed worlds, including the Isle of Berk, which is like How to Train Your Dragon.
Yep.
We have Dark Universe, which is like classic Hollywood horror movies like Frankenstein and Wolfman and, you know, The Invisible Man and Dracula and stuff like that.
That's right. Then you've got Nintendo World. Yeah, or Super Nintendo World.
Nintendo World, yes. And that's like a mashup. So the front half of it is like Super Mario, and then the back half of it is like Donkey Kong Country.
Right, yep, and then we cap off with the Ministry of Magic.
Yeah.
From the Wizarding World of Harry Potter.
That's right.
Something we know a thing or two about.
A thing or two about over here at Super Carlin Brothers.
Yeah, so this is a really cool experience, I think. Like, we got to go down, and, you know, it's really funny because, and I think we talked about this maybe when we had the opportunity to go and experience Tron over at Disney before it opened, but when we were kids, our dad, of course, was like a, you know, the local TV newscaster. And so in the state of Virginia, we have a Busch Gardens. I think there are multiple Busch Gardens.
Yeah, I mean, there's one in Orlando, too.
Okay.
At least.
And so I always remember, like, you know, the first ever roller coaster that I went on was the Loch Ness Monster.
Same.
Yep. And you were there, I think, in the car in front left to me. That's what I would recall.
Oh, I don't know. I think. I was the first time I rode on it. I think I was on a trip with my friend Zach.
No, you were. You were. Yes. You. This was my first.
Oh,
experience.
And your first experience.
Yes. I think. I want to say Dad was with me, and then like you were in like the row in front of me or something.
Okay.
But yeah. And then one of the other like big notable rides at Busch Gardens was the Big Bad Wolf, which was like one of those rides that like made it always look like you were about to go like careening into like a building, and at the very last second it would like turn and you were like, whoa.
It was like a hang down roller coaster.
Yes. It was super fun.
It was.
And I don't know like if it was just because of the way that like I was experiencing roller coasters at the same time as the video game Roller Coaster Tycoon came out.
Yeah.
But like roller coaster types, I feel like used to be something that was like I was like very I don't know if knowledgeable is the right word, but like if somebody were to be like, oh yeah, like Alpengeist, like it's a hang down coaster or whatever. It was like, you know, it's like every, it's like, you know, Shockwave at King's Dominion, it's a standing roller coaster. Like everything, it was kind of like I always like sort of knew the kind of configuration.
Yeah, absolutely.
That might be associated.
Dude, Roller Coaster Tycoon was just one of the best games ever.
You know, it really was. It really was. It's a game that like I would just legitimately go back and play like the original version on like a gaming channel type situation.
We should absolutely do that. We should just start screen, because I think you can get like the old version, like Roller Coaster Tycoon 2, I want to say, is the one we had.
Yes.
I want to say.
I think you're right.
Yes. I think that was like peak Roller Coaster Tycoon as well.
That was like the one.
Now, it's like Tony Hawk Pro Skater 2. It's like there were plenty before. There was plenty after, but like that's the one everyone played.
Everyone played Tony
Hawk. That's the one everyone played. So yeah, I mean, we spent so much time, and you're right. It was just like the kinds of roller coasters they were like super, that felt like a really important thing.
It really did. Yeah, absolutely. It's like you wanted to get like a good medley. Like if you were going to a park, it was like there needed to be like the full variety of kinds of roller coasters because you built them all in the video game and you want to see them in real life. But the one hilarious thing I always remember about Roller Coaster Tycoon though was that like you would go in and the game would make these like super elaborate coasters that would like go through the ground and like, you know, have all these fun loops and stuff. Mm-hmm. But if you tried to build literally just anything at all and you put any thrill in it at all, then the park goers were just too intimidated.
They were like intensity level too high. We can't handle it.
Right. It's like it literally goes in a circle. Like I made it do nothing. I don't understand.
Come on. Come on, guys.
So that's almost like one of those things like where like I wonder if when I was building there was like a bar over on the left that was like literally indicating to you like whether or not you were like in the sweet spot.
Nah, there wasn't.
Because I was gonna say, because you know, it's like if it was there, I feel like I would have seen it.
I put
many hours into Roller Coaster Tycoon.
Many hours.
Long story long, though, I do remember that, you know, like I had you were there, obviously, but had this very, you know, like benchmark day in my life going to the Busch Gardens for the first time and experiencing roller coasters for the first time and learning that Dad was amongst the first people to ever ride Big Bad Wolf because he had been there during the press day. He had been like sent out from the TV station to be a part of the opening launch so that he could then communicate to the public what's happening at Busch Gardens and, you know, sort of like give like a first person account of the experience.
Yeah.
And as a kid, I mean, this was like the kind of thing. I even had a friend in sixth grade whose like username was like Roller Coaster Engineer 777 or something like that. Like he was like a roller coaster aficionado,
right?
And wanted to design roller coasters when he got older, and
didn't we all?
Yeah, roller coaster enthusiast, I think is what it was.
Yeah,
now that I remember. But anyway, so this was like my claim to fame, though, was like, you know, like we'd be like sitting at the sixth grade lunch table, we'd all be talking about like which roller coasters we'd been on in our lives, and you know, like regaling one another with front row Alpengeist experiences.
Of course.
But like my cool fact was like, I was like, you know, my dad was like one of the first people to ever ride Big Bad Wolf. You know, he was there, like
he was there,
like opening day,
right?
Yeah. So, or even before opening day, like press day. And so, it's really cool because I think that like now growing into adulthood, it's almost like being invited to an opportunity like this one to have the experience to get to be at a theme park before it was, you know, fully opened. It's kind of like I feel like this is, it's almost as much of an experience that we got to have. It's like a gift that we get to give to our kids.
Absolutely.
You know,
like, I mean it's not like that. It's the exact same thing.
It is, you know? Yes.
And you know, we have been fortunate enough to do it like four times now.
Yes.
Which is wild because we got to go to Ratatouille in Disney World when that opened.
Yep,
in Epcot. Then we got to do the Halcyon. That one is really special. The Halcyon, the Star Cruiser at Disney World, which was only open for like 6 months or something.
I think it was like 18 months.
Okay. I mean, that one's so cool because, I mean, we got to do it and it was super fun. We have a whole, you know, episode here on Popcorn Culture about that. And over on the main channel if you want to see like a more firsthand experience. But now it's gone. Like it didn't actually succeed, which is a bummer. It was a bummer. I mean, it was a very expensive experience and it wasn't like your typical Disney World experience. But so I can see why maybe it didn't make it, but we will always have gotten to do it.
We will, yeah, and that's a cool one too, because when you are like a guest on the experience that was the Halcyon, they gave you like a pin that like marked you as having like ridden the Halcyon, and then they also had special magic bands that were like, you know, for guests of the Halcyon. And now it's like, that was like the only way to get those things, and it's like now we have them. So that's like one of those where I'm like 50 years from now, those Halcyon pins are going to be worth
I mean, because we were just at the Pin store in Orlando, which of course we've talked before, and I saw the Halcyon pin there, and it was like being sold for like $70, and I was like, dang,
and we got them,
and we've got them. Yeah. Mine is like so smudgy and stuff now because the kids have handled it a bunch, well, I mean, and, but you know,
it's,
whatever.
It's just well loved.
It's just well loved. You
broken
know?
In,
broken
even.
In. That's exactly. Right. That's exactly. Right. Exactly.
Yeah. But yeah, no. So I think it's really cool because like whenever something like this happens, I do always kind of feel that like. That swell of pride because, you know, it's crazy because I feel like growing up, it's like one of those weird things where, you know, obviously all parents hope that their kids will continue to go on and sort of like, you know, take whatever success you had as a parent and hopefully find a way to leverage that into their opportunities and thrust them forward into, you know, a greater tomorrow or whatever. But like, you know, dad's job was always so interesting and he had so many like remarkable like opportunities and things. It was always like, how are we ever going to compete with this? Like,
right.
There's nothing we can do that we're ever going to like, you know, be able to, I mean, shy of just literally following in those exact footsteps, which also was nearly impossible because the local news media wave, I think he wrote it like, I mean, a hang 10, you know?
Yeah,
like,
absolutely. Like,
I mean, he got to be there during like its rise, its peak, its crest, like, you know, he went through the
whole thing,
the barrel. Yeah, it was all incredible. So growing up though, you know, that was the thing. It's like our dad had a cool job and he got to do really cool things. And so going into adulthood, it's like there's this kind of like tick box sensation that I feel like we get to have whenever something like getting to, you know, go to this theme park, you know, before it officially opens gives us. And I don't know. So it's like, there's a big piece of me that it's like, if nothing else, if like, you know, rides aside, food aside, contacts met, you know, all the, you know, merch bought, all those things aside, we get that. And
right.
that is special to me.
I know. It is. I felt the exact same way. Like, oh my gosh. Like, because this one at Epic Universe, you know, it wasn't even just like, we're getting to preview a new ride. You're getting to preview an entire theme park.
Yes. And a rather remarkable one at that. You know?
Yeah.
I mean, it's because it really is. It's fairly unique. Like, the layout of it reminds me a lot. If you've been to Epcot at Disney World before, there's the World Showcase. And if you can imagine, if you haven't been there before, that it's like you walk in and as you go around this like gigantic circle, there's stops every, I don't know, like 150, 200 yards or so that will kind of like take you into like a new country.
Yeah.
And that's sort of like what the experience is like. So it's really fun because then like as you go around, you kind of get to like get this cultural experience of going around the world and
yeah.
eating different kinds of food and seeing different kinds of culture and stuff like that. And it's one of my favorite things about Disney World. And I would say that Epic Universe is like built kind of in that way.
Right. There's like a big, you know, water or lake or pond or whatever in the middle, which has a giant like carousel in the middle of it.
A rather gorgeous carousel.
Yeah.
I mean, it's really a showpiece for the park. We didn't ride it. We should have. I feel like that.
Yeah, maybe. I think it's the only thing we didn't ride.
I think it is. Yes. Yeah. But otherwise then, so yeah, you have this big ring and then the four spokes, as Jay said, that kind of go off in each direction.
Yeah.
So it's like, then what you can do is you can start, go into one, pop back out, go into the next, pop back out, you know, and
right.
then in the center as well, there's other stuff to do. So it's a really cool layout for a park. And then as you enter each of the various portals into those different worlds, you basically just fully transport yourself into each of the new realms.
Yes, you do.
They're very immersive.
They're pretty immersive. So should we just like kind of like run down each world a little bit here and kind of like say what we did everywhere?
Yeah. I think that's a great idea. So where do you want to kick off?
Well, let's kick off in the Isle of Berk.
Yeah.
Yes. Which is the How to Train Your Dragon land, and going into it. So we were there for like the grand opening celebration, but like maybe 2-3 weeks ago, there was like a different press event.
Yes.
That where a bunch of influencers and people got to go down. And just watching all the videos from that, it seemed like the How to Train Your Dragon Land was like the most hyped up section of the park.
I would say that like even like upon leaving, I felt like the Isle of Berk was like the one, which is saying something, you know, like because there's a Harry Potter land.
I know.
Involved here, you know, it's something that's so near and dear to us. But the Isle of Berk is really, really cool. Like, you know, that How to Train Your Dragon like franchise is one that like I can't decide if I would regard it as like an unsung hero or like an underdog or something like that. Like it's very weighty in its own right, but it never seemed like it had something like this. And then once you actually got to enter the world, you kind of start to realize like how expansive it actually is, and like
yeah,
there is a lot of lore in it, and there's a lot of like world building, and the theming is all really great. It's all very Vikings, and
yeah,
you know, like it's cool.
It is very cool. And it's like, you know, they've got like the giant statues, and I would say it was the land that felt like the most built out, that had like the most number of things to do.
That's probably fair.
It as well, like it felt the most complete out of everywhere else. So like the very first thing we did was go to the dragon racing ride.
Yes.
which when you just look at it, looks like it's just sort of like a tilt-a-whirl or something. Like it's got a big heavy arm that's gonna like go down, and it's gonna lift you up on the other side and spin you around and whatever.
Yeah. In Roller Coaster Tycoon jargon, I think it was called scrambled eggs.
Yeah, yeah. You know, you remember scrambled eggs from Roller Coaster Tycoon 2? That yeah. You got it
right.
Yeah, so it's a big scrambled eggs. But the twist here is literally a twist, where as you're sitting in your seat, which is shaped like a dragon, you've got these like handles on either side for your hands to grab onto. And what those do, you can move them up and down, and they control the wings of your dragon.
Yes.
Yes, but it is not just a gimmick, like, oh, look, I can make them flap while I'm riding or something. Like, the way you move them affects the weight ratio of the dragon that you're on. And once the ride has started, you are on like a free floating, like, I don't know what the word is.
Kind of like
axle.
Like a gimbal or something. Yeah. Like it's like you, like if you could think like a gyroscope or something, it's kind of like you're flying in a pattern that the arms are going to hold you in. Like that, there's no way to escape, obviously, that construct of it. However, you like your experience can be radical, while like your kids next to you can be simple,
very peaceful, gentle,
which I think is a nice blending of worlds. Because you can get up there, and they keep talking about it, like while you're in line, like, you know, oh, you're not going to beat my barrel roll record or whatever, and you're sort of like, wait, I can't tell if they're joking. Can you actually do barrel
that
rolls?
That was the thing. Like like they keep telling you about it, and like the characters keep bragging about it. But the character who's bragging about it the most is in the movies. His name is Snotlout, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he's like being like, his whole character is that he's sort of like over the top and exaggerates a lot.
Yes.
About everything, about his own greatness about it. So he's talking about doing all those barrel rolls, and you're like, oh, but he's probably just exaggerating, like you can't actually do barrel rolls on the ride.
Right.
Yeah.
It turns out you can.
You can actually. So let me just tell you now, you can do them. But we got as far as being like on the ride, and it was like, wait, can you do them or not?
Right.
Like I wish I could say that it was more obvious going in that you could do them, but I really like even the girl we talked to, she's like, oh, you guys gonna spin? And we're like, can you spin?
Yeah,
you
right. Know? Yes. And that's the thing, is like getting the, like there's a little bit of skill involved, and it only gives you like three full rotations.
Yeah.
So it's like, if I could see a world where if you're a local and you could go a lot, and like, you know, sort of like, you know, like when times, you know, wait times are short or whatever, because that's the thing, is that especially with a brand new park, brand new ride, wait times are going to be long for a minute.
Yeah.
And that means that you're going to have three rotations to get up there to figure out like how to do one of these barrel rolls.
Yeah.
And it's probably going to take a few times to like really like get it dialed in and kind of get like the exact positioning right, because it's not as easy as just like,
yeah,
you know, right flap down, left flap up.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. Like I think like what I was figuring out was almost just scoring like, like doing that, doing like one side up, one side down. And then it was almost like a swing. Like it was like you'd go one way and then you'd immediately shift them. And then you go as far as you could the other way and then immediately shift them. And like eventually you get enough momentum to spin.
And then it would start doing it.
And then it would start doing it. But like we kept trying to like watch to see if other people were doing it, but it seemed like no one had quite figured it out. So we were like, can you spin? And we would watch and some people would get like kind of sideways and then get close to it. But you'd be like, there must be something blocking them or something.
Yeah. It's like, is there just like a little like, you know, latch that basically will let you go like almost
upside down. But no, you can spin. You can do it. And let me just say that if you are an adult, try and spin. Like if you are not going to do the barrel rolls, it's probably not worth doing that ride unless you have like little kids who just want to do the thing.
Yeah.
Because otherwise it's an extremely gentle, like few loops through the air.
Yeah.
But if you can do the spins, you're going to be having a crazy time on this ride.
I'm trying to think though, because we were talking to a couple of the other people who were there that were telling us that a ride or attraction like this exists, I think somewhere in like Michigan maybe.
Oh, okay.
And there's like this woman who has like absolutely mastered it. And she's gone like super viral on like, you know, TikTok and like local news. And she, you know, they've like done all these interviews with her and stuff, but she knows the exact position. And when you watch the video of her going in circles, she's literally doing like nothing but flips.
Wow.
The whole like, time. Yeah, I'll have to try to find the video. The woman has like a funny name, you know, for like the person who's like the master of the barrel rolls.
Right.
It's like, you know,
do a barrel roll.
Yeah. This mall attraction or whatever. But if I can find it, I'll link in the show notes because it's just hilarious. Like watch it work. Full force.
Right.
But yeah, so it was fun either way though. It was like a neat it's a neat concept for something that gives you like a bit more agency, which is not something that I typically feel like you have on rides. You know, like you could go to you could do like Buzz Lightyear Space Ranger Spin, or Toy Story Mania, for example, as like some Disney like attractions that are like similar where you're like you're interacting, you're playing a game, you can move your cart a little bit, especially on Buzz Lightyear. You know, it's like it's fun that you're getting to like do something.
Yes.
You know, like you're involved. But this is one where it's like if you want to make it thrilling and you can make it thrilling, then it's going to be thrilling.
And it's going to be. Yeah.
Otherwise, it'll be a little.
Otherwise, it might be a little gentle and boring.
Yeah.
So it's really what you make of it. But like just know that you can spin and do try to do it.
Exactly.
Yes. Yep. OK. Well, that's about all I have to say about the dragon racing. Let's see. Next up, let's talk about the fire drill
ride,
because this is another ride where you had like a lot of agency inside of it. This is a ride where you are Vikings on a boat, and it's like you're doing like training for like putting out fires in Berk or whatever, so that like, you know, if the dragons catch something on fire, you got to go put it out or whatever.
Exactly.
But so you have got your there's like four of you to a team, and just know that it is like a game. It is a team game. There is a score.
There's a winner.
There's green benches and blue benches, and whichever side you're on, that's what team you're on. But everyone gets like a water cannon, and you have a lever and you pull it, and I mean it is fun. It shoots a huge blast of water out.
Yes.
And there's just targets everywhere for you to try and like hit. Some of them are moving, some of them are in different places. It's pretty easy to hit all of them once you kind of get the hang of it, but like the more you hit, the more points your team will get. But the other half of it is that, and I don't know if this is like if you hit certain targets it'll splash the other team, or if you hit certain targets it'll splash your team, or if you miss certain targets, it'll splash your team, or if none of that matters at all, and you're just going to get splashed no matter what. But this ride is better than any other water ride I've been on at concealing where you're about to get splashed from.
Yes!
Because, man, you're going to get wet.
Yes, yeah. We walked over, and we're kind of looking at it, and of course, you know, like, we're like, kind of in a position where we're planning to be filming a lot, but you also want to experience everything. So we're, like, asking the person, we're like, you know, like, how wet you get, and they're like, you're gonna get wet.
Yeah.
And they actually, I have no idea if this is always an offering or not, but they had ponchos that we could put on, just like little plastic ones. So we both got all wrapped up in our poncho, and I was trying to film you a little bit while we were doing it, and I was kind of like, okay, I want to go play on the other
side.
Then, like, I went over, you know, I started shooting some stuff, and I mean, not for nothing, but I totally won.
I don't know if that's true.
You don't know if that's true?
No, I don't know. I don't remember seeing which side won.
Mine totally won.
I don't don't think we know one.
There's like a little slider thing. It's like all the like little letters. It was like winner.
Oh, okay. Well, I don't know.
It's over on my side.
I don't know about that.
Okay.
But it was a super fun ride because you just get to like play and shoot stuff the entire time. But every now and then, like, yes, something will like throw a giant bucket of water on you, or it may just like erupt from the river itself, which is, you can't see that coming at all. And if you're the one standing in front of it, like, good luck.
But there's also spots where the other boats in front of you can just turn their gun and
shit. Like, you can't just, like, that's the real play. If you're in, like, a big group, try and get on the second boat so that you can just shoot the people in front of you.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah, it's like, sorry, Mom.
Sorry. You're not sorry. I know. There was, you might even accident. There was, like, a training spot, and I was like, oh, I wonder if you can reach the other boat, and then I did, and I totally hit just some stranger, and I was like, whoops, never mind.
Sorry.
Yep.
Oh man, good times. Yep. So that was the fire drill.
That was fire drill. You're gonna get wet.
Yep. Then the next one we got is Hiccup's Wing Gliders. And this one is kind of like a small coaster.
Yeah.
It kind of gave me reminiscence of Goofy's Barnstormer, if you've ever done that one.
Barnstormer. I'd say it's more like Slinky Dog.
You know what I meant to say is Slinky Dog.
Yeah,
it's more like Slinky Dog.
More like Slinky Dog.
You're exactly right. Yeah. It's more I could see it being a lot of young children's first roller coaster, and they'll be the better for it.
Absolutely. Yeah, this is a great first like roller coaster for your kids.
Yes, you're completely right. I mixed up Slinky Dog and Goofy in my head. But yes, I think it's definitely like built, I could see it being extremely thrilling, you know, to like a younger age range, but it's also like a completely satisfactory, like small coaster.
Yes, absolutely. Like it doesn't go upside down ever, but there's, you know, fun ups and downs and turns and stuff like that. It's never like crazy. Like if you've done Slinky Dog, you can absolutely do this. This one's maybe like a little bit faster at times.
Yeah.
It's like a little newer, and I would say it was more exciting than Slinky, but it's in that exact realm.
Yeah, for sure.
Yes.
For sure. Yep. So that was good too. Yeah. Kind of just like a neat little experience. And then there is the show.
Untrainable Dragon.
Yes. Yes. So, this was something that I got back and I was telling some of my friends about over the weekend. And they seemed shocked. Even like Alice was like confused. Like she was sort of like, wait, there's a show like on the street. And I'm like, no, like you go into
like a theater.
And she was like, wait, there's a theater? And I was like, yes, like with actors, like, you know, it's like, I don't know why. And so I have literally no idea whether or not this is the kind of thing that people be thrown by or not. But yes, you go in and there's, well, I mean, like, I would say it's like they're shorter, but like a Broadway caliber.
Yeah, I mean, it is extremely high production value for sure.
Yeah,
it is like, you know, because a lot of times, like, you know, like a theater will be built for a specific show or something. Like if you're in like Vegas or something and there's going to be a Cirque du Soleil show, they will build the theater specifically for that show.
Right.
And the show will be better for it. And like that is the case here. They're like, we don't need to make this theater available for any other shows that might come at any other date. Like this will be the one show that we do forever.
Right.
And we will make it extremely, you know, detail oriented, and everything will be perfect for this particular like happening. And so, I mean, everything looks really, really good. They've got like massive animatronics. I don't want to like spoil or anything for you. I will say though that while we were there watching the show, it did break down at one point.
It did. Yes. It did. Yeah.
Which was weird because you wouldn't think a show can break down.
Right. Right. Yeah. Yeah. So maybe still working through some of those like those earlier bits of kind of, you know, getting through all the little bugs and details and stuff like that. But you know, I thought it was very entertaining, super well done. And the people that they've got and the way that they've done the costuming for all the characters from How to Train Your Dragon are like very spot on.
Very like, spot on.
It's there's like a style almost to where like if you've seen the movies, you know that they're all like the kids, especially like Hiccup and Astrid, are like very like skinny, models as far as like the figures themselves are concerned, but then like their boots are kind of like oversized, their shoulder pads are kind of oversized, like you know, everything,
their like hands, like their forearms are kind of like bigger.
Yes. And so the way that the costuming works and the way that it like translates to how the actors behave and the extent to which they have like adapted their specific like mannerisms and inflections and everything, like it's all there. Like you're like, oh my gosh, like that's Hiccup, that's Astrid, like yes, absolutely.
Yeah, the actors they've got doing the characters, because they're not like in costumes, I mean they're like obviously wearing costumes, but like their faces, they're just them. Yeah, yes. they're just having to act like them, and they're having to do that like for like pretty long periods of time outdoors with random guests, and they are like, they were spot on every time we saw them.
Yes. Yeah. It's really shocking to me. Like, in, you know, you see this with a lot of like noteworthy actors where they've got like an inflection or a tone of voice or something that like clearly is like specific. And I can never remember the guy's name who plays Hiccup. I feel like he's in like a lot of like, oh gosh, who's your guy from the studio? Seth Rogen.
Yeah. Yes, you're right. He's in a lot of stuff with Seth Rogen. Judd Apatow. That's the director who does a lot of those things that he's also in.
Yeah, but it's like that, like, you know, like we're Vikings. Yeah. It's an occupational hazard.
Yeah, he's like, got that like extremely nasally voice that Hiccup's got.
Yes. Yeah. It's like a few shades short of like Owen Wilson or something.
Right. It's
wow.
But like the actor, the guy we saw playing Hiccup was like, I mean, he was spot on. It was so good.
It's very compelling. It's very compelling. So anyway, the show was amazing. The story, I think, is the story is just a reason to do everything else. Like, I don't think that you're going to be like, whoa, original thinking.
Oh, for the show?
The show.
Yeah. The plot is, you know, paper thin, but like that's okay because the rest of it is really like visually compelling.
Yes. So, I mean, I wouldn't skip that ever. But then when you exit, you get to go out and right next to like where the show is where you have like the opportunity to meet the like Hiccup and Toothless.
Yes.
And while we were in line, like just as we were like about to get up, it just happened to be the case that Astrid walked out with her dragon, which was like a person like in like a really cool
if you've ever seen those like raptor costumes that people do.
It's really, really neat. So you got to meet them and Astrid's dragon. I have no idea why I was wearing like a white shirt with like birds all over it, and I couldn't tell if it was like my shirt that was like causing the dragon, but it was like, it kept like nuzzling me in a way that I was sort of like, you are making me believe that you were just a dog that wants pets right now.
Right. Yeah.
And I kept having to remember, it's like, this is not a creature.
This is a person.
This is a person who is doing this right now.
Good dragon acting.
Great dragon acting.
Yeah.
Yes. And I was sort of like, I was like, what? Hi, little guy.
Yeah. Stormfly, I think is
Stormfly,
his name.
Stormfly. Yeah. Her name? Right. Yeah.
Her name? I don't know. Yeah. And Astrid's dragon.
Astrid's dragon.
Yeah.
So we got pictures with them, and then we got to go over and meet Toothless, which is it is like a robot, I guess.
Is not an actor.
Not an actor.
Certainly someone must be like sitting there doing the controls behind the scenes.
Yes, because you can do all the things and Toothless will be like reacting to your interactions appropriately.
Yeah.
Which is kind of cool. Like I thought for sure that like it would be the kind of situation where like if you wanted to do like the reach your hand out and like look away photo or whatever, that like the person who's there sort of like doing the operation might just like tap like a button like behind its like ear, you know, and it'll like do that gesture.
Yeah.
But instead it's sort of like it will free flow react to everything that's happening in real time. It's got like Toothless, I think one of like the big characteristics, I was just watching it again with Addison over the weekend, like there's like its mouth is really vital. Like, I mean, obviously Toothless comes from like the gummy mouth situation or whatever, but
retractable teeth.
Right. But it, like, it tries to like to do like the really goofy, funny, like smile in the movie and everything. And I think that like when you go and like take a photo, if you're doing like a really toothy grin, like Toothless will like literally like open its mouth and have like its teeth like on like proud display, like, and like literally like pull its gums back a little bit and like, so we got some good pictures
with Toothless. And that one is wild to me too, because like, you know, like if Hiccup's there, you can at least you're interacting with Hiccup, but like he's not there at every second. Sometimes, like, you know, because it's not a guy in a costume, like the actors just need breaks and stuff. So they might have some, you know, other Vikings. Like when we got up there, it was Twig, you know, a person who lives in Burke.
Right.
And they were interacting with Toothless with us. But like, it's crazy to me because that line was like an hour long most of the time we were there.
Yeah.
Which is wild because at the end of the day, you're standing in line to like stand next to a robot, you know?
Yes. Yeah. Yep. Exactly. But it really, I mean, you could, and that was even kind of shocking too, because like we were, of course, there during like a period of time that wasn't at like full occupancy
right.
either. So I can see where that line is going to be like a hot commodity, like to get to early.
Yeah.
If you can, or keep an eye on that wait time. Cause I think that, it really is, it's unique. And it's like, even just like touching, Toothless, it's like the material that he's made out of is like very like,
yeah, it feels dragon-esque.
It does.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's really cool. So that's like one of those layers though, where you could like sort of, like it's always tricky because like whenever a new theme park opens, like so much energy and technology went into creating what it was then, but they all like theme parks ultimately become snapshots of the best technology that was available the day they opened.
Right.
And like, so like it's fascinating because Toothless, especially to me, it felt like somewhere where you can easily see the bar was raised.
Absolutely.
On like what is available.
Right. Whereas if you go to like, you know, the Country Bear Jamboree at Disney, sometimes you sit down and you walk out, you're like, boy, this is entertainment, you know?
Right.
Like,
yes.
It seems so like, you know, like you're watching just like a little bit better Chuck E. Cheese show.
It does have a lot of that. Yeah. Like, and I think, or even, you know, like one of me and Alice's favorite things to do is the Carousel of Progress at Disney, which is, you know, it was at like the World's Fair, I think in like 1960, 1965 or something like that. But, and then the attraction was brought over to Disney. And it's like, when you're watching it, it's almost like part of what you're appreciating about the experience is how far they had come with so much less technology of the day.
Yeah.
But no part of you is sitting there thinking that like the man talking to you is like a real man. You know,
yeah,
like, no. you know that it's just like an animatronic with like a moving like mouth or whatever.
Exactly.
And yeah, so it's kind of like there's like a quaintness, there's like an appreciation to like what they were able to do with so much less.
Right. And like, and then you know that it was part of the World's Fair and this is just like a really historic ride and there's like, you know, a lot of, you know, you give a lot of leeway for stuff like that.
Yeah, for sure. So yeah, getting to see what this kind of thing can look like at its absolute best is I think what the Toothless experience is.
It'll be interesting to see how Disney claps back on this one.
It will be very interesting to see what comes next.
Yeah, because yes. Certainly they're going to try and answer this themselves.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
I thought this was no mistake at all. So when we got back from Epic Universe, which opened as we're recording this last Thursday.
Yeah.
Then we went camping for a day.
Yep.
Which was great, and we'll talk about that next week, because there were so many fun things that happened. But then the next day, I went home, and my whole goal, because I was really tired from camping, was like, I'm going to get the kids set up with some lunch, I'm going to go take a shower, and then I'm going to sit on my bed, and I'm going to try and watch the F1 race, because it's fun to watch, but also really fun to fall asleep to.
It is.
Yeah. There's nothing like a good race nap, you know?
It's a thing.
It is a thing. It's absolutely
get
a thing.
Get into F1, because it's partially sports, partially napping.
Partially napping, I know. Seems weird. Like, wait, what? But seriously, do that. And the other good thing about it is that there's no commercials. They can't cut away because anything could happen at any time. But that means the front, like the intro section, will have some commercials in it. And one of the commercials I saw immediately, and I thought it was no mistake, was for Disney World. And they are bragging, like the whole thing, like the focus of their commercial was like, we've got four epic worlds, three, or like, you know, four different massive theme parks. We've got, you know, three water parks. And they were just like, and this. And because part of how Universal is marketing Epic Universe is that they are now able to say that we've got four full, like, come to Universal, stay at one of our resorts because we've got four theme parks you can go to.
Right. Yes.
Because now they've got Epic Universe, Universal Studios, Islands of Adventure, and Volcano Bay.
Yes.
But like, So you like to the, like if you're just like a you know, if you're shopping theme parks, am I going to Disney World or Universal? You might look at Disney World and be like, okay, I think I got Magic Kingdom, Animal Kingdom, Epcot, and Hollywood Studios, or we could go to Universal and go to their four parks or whatever.
Right.
And it's like if you're like a little more leaned in, like Volcano Bay is more like Blizzard Beach, you know, it's like a smaller water park thing you can go do.
Right.
But like to the average person, that might not be obvious. So now we can say, look, we've got four things. And Disney was like, okay, fine, we see what they're doing. They're trying to copy us. Listen here, people. We've got like 15 parks down here.
It's true. It's definitely on, but yeah. I think in a way that will benefit people who
the
like
consumer.
The yeah. consumer. Because now it's like, you know, because that measuring stick is feels like at the very least, I think the marketing is trying to say that the measuring stick has become even. And I'll sort of like leave it to each respective person to make their decisions about that. But I think because that pressure could be mounting from like across town, you know, who's going to like win and what age group are they going to win and in what ways are they going to do it and how do they counter the latest and greatest thing over there? It's like, you know, ultimately what you're going to see is everybody trying even harder to get the attention.
Absolutely. I mean, it's an interesting, it is an interesting little theme park battle to watch over the past few years. Cause for a long time, what you could have said is that like Disney is bigger and like the experience overall is making me better for families. But like, if you want thrilling rides, like go to Universal cause they've got like the better rides.
Right.
Yeah. And it's like, well, Disney is clearly like heard that and they're like, you know what, we have Guardians of the Galaxy now,
right?
We've got Cosmic Rewind, we've got Tron.
Yes,
you know, like they have been slowly upping their exciting rides game.
Yes. Yeah, trying to incorporate some thrills into the equation to see if they can't win that back. So yeah, that battle, that back and forth, that conversation is going to be nothing but fun.
I know. Yeah. In the meantime, like the answer is it's fun to go to either of them.
Right. That's exactly what I was going to say. It's like, because really ultimately when it comes down to it, they're both awesome.
Right.
Like,
yeah. Let them force each other into better things and then just enjoy it.
So. And just enjoy it. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So
in Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.
Anyway, but yeah, I think that we really have spent some time here on the Isle of Burke.
Well, that, as we said, it was the most built out and there was the most things to do. So we can just touch on the food real quick. We went to like one candy store that, cause we were like, oh, you know, what's in here? And they had, you know, very fun looking candy, but I will say, I don't know if this is how it is now. Like it was like, you know, they have like a glass case and you're like, oh, I want one of those. And you think they're just going to reach in and grab it and put it in a little box and hand it to you.
Yes.
And that is not what happened.
No.
Yeah.
It was kind of surprising.
It
actually was.
Yes.
Because we were standing there and hilariously, we were in line with I Justine. Which was just kind of like, oh, hey.
Yeah. Like having this minor freak out, like, oh my God.
Yeah. But like, yeah, also we're kind of like looking at each other. It's like, is your order ready yet? Because it's like, we're kind of having this like very casual conversation with this person who we've only known from like extremely far.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like, well, this is kind of crazy. But yes, I will say that we wanted to sample some of the stuff that they had. And so Jay got the most comically large cake pop I've ever seen in my life. Like, if you've ever gone to like Starbucks and gotten like one of like the little like lollipop shaped ones, and you get to the end of it and you're like, man, I wish there was a little bit more on that, then go to Universal, go to the Isle of Burke and buy one of their cake pops, because if you eat it, you'll probably be full for the rest of your life.
You will probably, because like, to if you just look at it, you might be like, okay, that's like maybe the equivalent of like four Starbucks cake pops just sort of put into one big disc. It looks like a shield. It's very cool looking.
It is.
The reality is that it's closer to like 10 or something.
It was remarkably decadent.
It was like, very, and the stick it's on is really, really short, which makes this very heavy thing that you're having to hold up with just your thumb and your index finger. And it's like, it honestly was like hurting my wrist to hold it up. Like, it was that heavy on top. I could not finish it. And that's saying something.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, yes, you ate several bites of it. You handed it to me. I took a few bites of it.
Yeah.
And there was, I mean, like, honestly, if Alice and Beth could have been there, like, we easily could have split one of these things four ways.
Easily.
Like, no issue easily. At all. But very good.
It was,
like,
yes.
The flavor was amazing.
Yes. It's just, it is bigger than you think.
It's a big portion size. Yeah.
But what happens is you give them your order and then they like take the menu thing to the back and like prepare it, I guess.
Yeah. I don't
like
know if
individually.
I don't know if they're made to order. I don't know if there was like possibly like a lower capacity situation where they didn't just have like trays and trays and trays of them like ready
to go.
Yeah. So it legit. You know, I got like three little chocolate eggs that I wanted to sample, which were like kind of like a truffle type situation.
Yeah.
And you got the thing. And I want to say we waited 15, 20 minutes for them to be ready.
Thereabouts. Thereabouts.
So it was a little bit confusing because, you know, like you go to pay and then like gave me a ticket and I was like, so what do I do with this? And I'm like, oh, wait for them to call your number. And then like we like walked around the shop, like did everything. And I was sort of like, I'm afraid to ask again.
Yeah.
But also like,
it can't have taken you longer than 30 seconds to put those four items in a bag, right?
Yes. Yeah.
Right?
So that was like a little confusing. And then, you know, so. But then it was kind of fun too because then we got to talk to
We got to be like, this is taking kind of a while, right?
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Like, yeah.
And then they forgot one of her things, and so we're like walking outside, and she's like, "Oh, they forgot one."
We're like, "Oh no, just give it up, give it up."
Yeah, but now if we ever run into her again, we'll have a total conversation.
We will. Like,
do you remember that time?
Remember that was us in the Isle of Burke at the candy store.
Us old Isle of Burke lags.
That's right. So the candy store, unless they figured out the ticketing thing, it might not be worth the wait.
Yeah, well, it was good though. Yeah.
I mean, it was good, but it's like if you have like one day at the park, and if you want to spend like 20 minutes waiting for your candy order,
yeah,
you know,
yeah,
there's that.
Right.
But it might be worth waiting for the other food, which they have these like big, like cones that they're gonna call like sandwiches or whatever, but like what they're doing is they're trying to make these really big, impressive things for people to carry around. It's like at Chili's when they walk past with like the sizzling fajitas and you're like, ooh, what's that? That's what they're doing.
Right.
And it's effective because what people are going to be walking around with are these honking, giant Viking horn cone bread things.
Yes.
That are filled with mac and cheese and pork barbecue and chives and who knows what else is in there. I can tell you because I got there was an item called the PB&J and I was like, gotta do that.
Yeah, this is it. Jay's new thing.
I know. But then it's not peanut butter and jelly. It was pork belly and jam.
Yeah.
And let me tell you what, it was awesome.
It was so good.
It was so good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's another one though that I feel like if you ate the whole thing, like then the good news is you don't need to eat any more for
the
rest of
the thing.
Day.
That's the thing. It is extremely filling. So if you want to try one, maybe split it because it is big, but so tasty. But I think that's all we're going to say about Isle of Burke because we have so many more things to talk about still.
Yes, I know. Yeah.
Yeah.
So moving on, let's see here. The next thing we have on our list is Nintendo World.
Yeah.
This one's really exciting because I feel like I've seen like Nintendo World exists in Japan and also in California now.
Yeah.
So I've seen a lot of like coverage of what it's like to go into Nintendo World. And it was kind of like, oh my gosh, we finally have one here on the East Coast, you know, down in Orlando. So we get to like go and get the full experience. So Nintendo World, I would say, was the most like when you enter it, like everything is Nintendo.
Everything is Nintendo.
Like, you can't see. They've literally built like walls encompassing the whole thing.
It's like you're on the inside of a giant volcano or something.
Yeah.
Like the way they've built the walls around it. And then every wall, so it's like you're almost inside of a giant crater, I suppose.
Yes.
And then the way the top of that crater blends with the blue Orlando sky, if you're there on like a really clear day.
Right.
I mean, it is seamless. It feels like you were just in the Mushroom Kingdom.
It was really wacky. Like I looked up at the sky and I was like, how they get it to do that? And it's like, that's just the sky is just doing like they didn't do that.
They didn't
the sky
do that.
Is just
yeah.
the sky. But it looked perfect.
It looks perfect. And then like you're at such a distance that you just see the Koopas and the Bob-ombs and the coins and everything just spinning around in the distance. And it feels soap. And it's like, I think what works so much about it too is that like a lot of times if you have animatronics that just sort of do the same thing over and over, it's sort of like, it looks a little like, you know, just on repeat or something.
Yeah, yeah.
But if you're playing a game of Mario, that's exactly how they act, you know?
Yes.
They'll just be up on that wall walking back and forth.
Until you get there to do whatever.
Exactly.
Collect a coin or yeah, like pop on their shell.
Yeah.
Or yeah.
So it works really well in that regard. And it is hands down the most like immersive, you feel like you're there kind of place. The thing you want if you're going to go into a Nintendo world is the wristband.
Yes.
Though. Which is kind of like a magic band, and I wish it worked maybe in more places than just Nintendo World, because it's just gonna work inside there, and it does cost like $50 or something.
There's a little, yeah, but yeah, I agree with you. Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. It feels like it should be just like your magic band for Epic Universe.
Yeah,
and you can like pay with it and do like all the things that magic bands do.
Yeah, or like if you just had like an Epic Universe band that there was interactive things to do at like every single spot,
which would make sense, because even like when you get into the Ministry of Magic, there's like all like the wand related things.
Yeah,
then it's the wand that's doing the interaction. Yeah. not the wristband. So yeah,
right.
it is kind of interesting in that regard, but anyway, I'll let you continue.
Anyway, if you get it, you hook it up to an app on your phone, and then you can go like, you know, punch the question blocks and stuff like that, and they'll like ding and you get coins, and the coins are being collected on the app in your phone. And the more things you do around the park, the more little games you play, the more stickers you'll unlock in the app. That's really the only like thing you're trying to do, is like unlock all the stickers. But I will say it does seem like it's like a cumulative game, because some of the stickers, if you were like trying to be a completionist or whatever, will be like, you know, ride Donkey Kong's Minecart Mania 5 times, and it's like 5 times,
right?
You know, yeah. If you're there for a day at the park, there's no way you're getting it in 5 times and right. doing anything else.
Yes, yes. So maybe it's encouraging like repeat visits.
Yeah, like repeat visits. So yeah. I don't think when you leave the park you like lose all your coins. It's just sort of like when you come back, carry on.
I bet that especially for people who are like annual pass holders, locals, stuff like that, I bet that is going to end up being like a real fun interactive, like, I mean, it kind of reminds me of like, you know, like Pokemon Go or something like that, or Wizards Unite, like where it's sort of like you get to go in and it's like you want to hit all the stops, and especially once you know all the stops, it's like it gives you like a reason to go and interact with the whole space. Like there's like a place to go and do all the different little, you know, bits and bobs.
Right.
So yeah, I definitely think that'll end up being, I think that'll be a hit, especially for the people who are able to lean into it to its fullest.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. Really, really beneficial if you're like a pass holder or something. But either way, the joy of standing beneath a question block and punching it and getting the coins is like,
ba-ding, ba-ding, ba-ding.
It is satisfying every time. It works really well.
Yes, it does.
And it's just like, oh my gosh, this is exactly what I wanted.
Right, so, right. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
You get to be in the world.
Yeah.
There's even like one really like little cute spot where like the box is maybe like, I wouldn't say it's terribly high, but it's maybe like 5 feet off the ground. So like if you're like a kid, I could totally see the joy of getting to go and actually needing to like
jump
yeah. high enough, like with your arm raised in the air to do like the ba-ding, ba-ding, you know.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's gonna be really cool. I think that'll bring a lot of joy to a lot of people. That'll be a blast. But then the rides themselves, you know, are kind of interesting too. So this is like the one where you've got like Mario Kart, where you've
yes.
got like you have like a headset, and then like when you get into the ride itself, there will be like a visor that actually like clips onto the headset itself.
Yeah.
And then you actually have like sort of like a heads up display through your eyes, like, you know, based on like where you're looking and stuff, that is like showing you what would be happening on the track around you.
Yeah.
But and I'll get into that here in just a second, but the queue for the Mario Kart ride, I think in my personal opinion was the best queue at the park.
I think so. It was immensely immersive. You're basically waiting in line through Bowser's castle.
Yes.
And you're getting to see like, you know, his library, his, you know, Bob factory, his, you know, his throne, his like, you know, pictures of Peach everywhere. And
I was going to ask you, does Bowser always love Peach?
You know, I don't know if that's always been like an obvious thing. In like more recent memory, like in Mario Odyssey, he's definitely trying to like marry her.
Okay.
And then like in the movie, that's clearly his goal too.
Peaches, peaches, peaches,
yeah.
peaches, peaches, peaches.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But I don't know if like that's the reason he's been kidnapping her the entire time. I've always just thought it was like, yeah, I'll kidnap you and now I rule the kingdom because you're not here.
That is what I thought as well. But clearly, like, you know, there's like loving photos of Peach.
Oh,
displayed,
yeah.
You know,
just everywhere.
All over the place. And I was like, okay, And then, like, all the book titles are really funny because it's like, you can tell that, like, Bowser is clearly working so hard to try to figure out how to beat Mario, like, which almost comes with its own, like, comical layer of respect. Like Bowser's trying really hard.
Really hard.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And all the little things are just, I mean, It's almost as if they like sat down and had a creative meeting. It's like, we need to come up with like 1,000 book titles for different things you might need to research if you are actually living in the world where you race Mario Kart.
Right.
Like, and they're all, every single one of them is a winner.
Yes.
They're all good.
Yeah. And there's so many.
Yes. Yeah, yes.
Because, you know, the line just keeps going.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. But then the experience itself, I want to lay out my caveat that like it's possible that like I just was failing at the process of doing the Mario Kart experience, like the ride itself.
Okay.
Because it is interactive. You are competing with the person in the car with you.
Yeah.
Right. And there is like, you know, you can go through and hit all like the question blocks and get like your shells that you can then, you know, like use the triggers on the steering wheel to like shoot. And then you look at the people you want to shoot and you can shoot the shells at them and knock them back and pass them and whatever. But like the idea is that you're supposed to be like steering and playing Mario Kart. And then also like, it's almost as if you're playing Mario Kart first person, like you're in the cart,
right?
You're
exactly.
Steering the car as well as then like looking at like all the stuff in real time. I found the steering to basically be like a non-entity.
Well, it's a non-entity because the cart is already on a track. So
yes.
You don't actually have to steer. Like, turning the steering wheel left and right doesn't do anything to, like, you know, shift. It's not like Space Ranger Spin where you have the joystick and it's like, if you hit it left, the whole thing will spin left or anything like that.
Right.
You know, it doesn't do that. Like, all the steering really does is, like, if it says go left and you turn left, you'll just get, like, coins for having followed the directions.
Okay.
Yeah.
Maybe that's like what I was like. I was like, I feel like I'm turning left and it's not doing anything.
Yeah.
And
I mean, it all it does is get you coins for following directions.
Oh. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. Well, in that case, maybe just a couple more spins, I would have gotten like a little bit better at the game itself.
That is the thing. Yeah. It's definitely the kind of game where like it might take one or two tries doing it just to sort of like get the hang of it. Because otherwise, it's like it is pretty much chaos happening in front of you the whole time when you're trying to shoot things, and like you don't have unlimited shells. You have to like keep getting new question blocks. You have to like keep track of your resources, and
yeah,
you know, you're trying to figure out how to aim by just looking at stuff. And yeah.
It's definitely information overload.
Yeah,
like you're taking in a lot all at once. So yeah, I don't know how good we necessarily did at it. This would be like a really fun one if we ever had the opportunity to go down and do like a how to get a perfect score on Buzz Lightyear Space Ranger Spin, but like for Mario Kart. Like,
yeah,
you know, how do you go down and like truly master the experience?
Right.
I think that would be really fun to get better at. But I kind of walked off of it and I was like, I think I had more fun waiting in line.
Yeah, that's the good news. That yeah, the queue is so immersive and fun to look around at that was pretty good too.
Yes.
So that was Mario Kart, and then let's see, if you exit Mario Kart, boy, this was finding the entrance to some of the rides was a little tricky, specifically the Yoshi one.
Yes.
Because the track is on the upper level, but the entrance is on the lower level.
Yes.
And we walked up and down the stairs like twice trying to like figure out where to go.
We did.
Which was frustrating.
Yeah.
But once we found it, I would say, you probably don't need to do the Yoshi ride unless you just are super nostalgic about like Yoshi's Island or Yoshi's World or have very small kids. It is, you know, like a 1 mile an hour kind of ride.
It's like a people mover type situation. There is a small game involved where throughout the ride you are searching for shells, different
eggs.
Colors, eggs,
yeah.
Eggs. You're looking for eggs and they're different colors. And when you see them, you can press the button on your console and it will like activate. And then you're trying to collect the golden egg by collecting all three different colored eggs. And not for nothing, but we totally got
them. We totally got them.
Yeah,
so.
No big deal.
No big deal at all. It's almost impossible not to.
It is. It's very easy. Yes. I think that this is the ride. Addison, I think, would love it.
Yeah, that's true. Like Luke and Nick and Nate, they would have all had a blast on it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But it's certainly, it's not thrilling, but you know, you get to take in the park and your own unique perspective, yeah. I guess, by being out there. And it makes all like the very nostalgic Yoshi noises that if you've ever played like, you know, any of the Yoshi games growing up, like mm-hmm. that you'll definitely get hit square in the feels with that one. So anyway, we did it.
So that's that.
Then if you go over into like Donkey Kong Land, there, which is like kind of like its own separate entity within Nintendo World. You've got like the main area with like all the green pipes and the castles and Bowser and all that type of stuff. And yeah. then you can go over into Donkey Kong and it's all Donkey Kong.
Yeah.
Which is also really cool, and it has its own coaster, which is called Minecart Madness.
Yes.
Which, once again, kind of hails back to this, like, Mario Kart-esque vibe. And I would say that this particular roller coaster reminds me a little bit of kind of what I was saying about Toothless, where it's like you're getting to see a little bit of like what the snapshot of modern technology can look like.
Yeah.
Because it has a really cool gimmick to it, that basically the track that you're actually riding on is well below you.
Yes.
And then there's like a C-shaped arm that comes up and holds the cart that makes it look like all of the terrain that you're driving on is very irregular. So it's almost like there's a point where you like literally, as far as the track is in front of you is concerned, you leave the track.
Right.
The track breaks. And it, if you as the passenger in the car, it looks like you're just flying through the air.
Right.
And then, you know, like if you're going like up a hill, you might be like driving up steps.
Yeah.
A la Mario Kart.
Right.
You know, so it's like a da-da-da-da-da-da-da, like, but and obviously you're not really, but like the effect is good.
Yeah, like if you really have no idea what's going on, you're gonna start going up that hill and be like, wait, how are we moving up the hill? Why aren't we on tracks anymore? And then you get to the top and it's like the minecart levels of like old Donkey Kong games. So it's like it looks like you're on a track, and then yeah, sure enough, it'll be like, uh-oh, we need to jump to that track, and then like it will jump and you're like, whoa, how did that just happen, you know?
Yes. Yeah. It's like if I'm trying to think of I think it is Expedition Everest. There's kind of like a cool twist. This is an Animal Kingdom at Disney World, but you go all the way up this big track, and when you're looking in front of you, like the track is broken and splayed out in every direction. You're sort of like, oh, like,
yeah.
Like there's no track in front of me. And then the cool gimmick there is that you start going backwards. But this one is almost like as if you saw the broken track in front of you and then just kept going.
Right.
And you know, and it's like, wait.
Yeah. Hold on.
I'm not ready.
Yeah. So I thought it was really fun. I thought the effect was really good. I heard some people say they thought it was like a little jerky and stuff, because sometimes it's like has you jumping from like real quick between a couple of different tracks or going over like rough terrain or something. I didn't experience that.
I know. Yeah. I think we had a conversation with somebody where it was kind of like we went to finish each other's sandwiches, and instead they were like, yeah, it was really jerky. And we were like,
yeah, it was really fun. Oh,
what did you say?
Okay.
Yeah. So I don't know. Maybe it's like one of those things where it depends on like which cart you're in. I don't know.
Yeah.
Trying to think.
I don't know. So there's the ride. That one was fun. That's probably like the most thrilling one in Nintendo World. But then almost the main attraction over in Donkey Kong Country is it the floats?
The floats.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. These were very fun. You've got like a, it's like a, was it mango or pineapple? Excuse me. Mango or pineapple like juice in the bottle.
It was like Fanta. It was like a mango Fanta,
yeah,
or something. That's like the base for like a, like if you have like a root beer float with like root beer and vanilla ice cream, that's what you've got, except it is, yeah, like mango Fanta and banana ice cream.
Yes. Yeah. And then you've got like all sorts of different kind of like sprinkles on top, caramel popcorn on top, which the popcorn is like it's a strange texture with the ice cream, but I still thought that the overall experience was delightful.
Dude, I promise it works. Just get it. Like if you're like, what? Banana? I don't like bananas. Like, I promise, just get it.
Yeah.
Just, you're going to like it.
I ate the whole thing.
It was so good. It was like an absolute sugar rush, but like, yes, ate the whole thing.
And it's like, you know, talk about like an Instagrammable, dessert. Like it comes in like a cool Donkey Kong souvenir cup.
It's exactly the same as the Isle of Burke with the giant cones. That's Nintendo World's version of this. Like you're going to see people carrying it and you're going to be like, what? was that. I want it.
How do I get one?
How do I get
there?
One?
All right.
There's only one. There's only one food stand there, and they only sell one thing, and that's it.
Yep.
Yep. So you can do the ride there. You can get the float, and then you can do like a meet and greet with Donkey Kong. Really cool costume. We didn't do that.
But we saw it from afar. But yeah, the cool like costume thing that it comes out in, it's like that's Donkey Kong.
That's Donkey Kong.
He's just right there.
And then there's a bunch of like little hidden, you know, things for you to bring your magic band up to and interact with the world and stuff too.
Right, right. So then the last thing that we did while we were in Nintendo World was we went to Toad's Cafe.
Yes, we did.
Which this was another one of those things, like in the Super Mario movie, Toad is like a little cook.
Yeah.
You know, and I was like, is that always a thing with Toad, or is this kind of like a new
thing? I don't entirely know the answer. I think Captain Toad, in the Captain Toad video games, he's like, because you're like a little camper explorer dude, and I think that's where the cooking comes from.
Okay. Yeah. I gotcha. But yeah, it's a pretty delightful little place with some cool menu items. But you and I think we're both at the point where we're like, we need something like marginally healthy.
Yes.
So I think I got the caprese salad and you got the chicken salad?
I got like not chicken salad, like chicken salad sandwich, like it was...
Like a salad with chicken on it?
Like a salad with chicken on it, yes.
Yeah, yeah. And then we got the toad mushroom-shaped garlic knots.
Yes, we did.
Which were also amazing.
Yep.
But that was really great. That was very, like, refreshing.
Yes,
and delicious. Yeah.
Yeah, I would say. And yours in particular, like, came out as, like, a caprese salad, but it was, like, you know, everything had been shaped like a big piranha plant. So, like, the tomatoes were, like, the mouth, and, like, the mozzarella was, like, little spots on it. And
yes, yeah.
Yeah, that was very fun. Mine was called like a superstar salad or something. So the only thing like Mario about it was there was a big like Parmesan crisp in the shape of like one of the superstars.
Yeah.
Oh no, you know what? There was little superstar croutons too, which were super good.
Oh, those were really good.
Yes, those were really good now that I remember them. So yes, Toad's Cafe, really fun food, really good food. I would recommend a stop there if you need like a refreshing bite to eat.
That's
before
right.
you head over to your next location in Dark Universe.
Dark Universe. my whole takeaway with Dark Universe was out of coming into Epic, like the other three worlds were ones I was very excited about. There were things I was anticipating. I had seen information about them pop up, you know, in like all the various channels and stuff like that. Looked really, really cool. Dark Universe was something that I basically knew nothing about, and I don't consume a lot of like horror related, like the horror genre,
right?
At large. And so I think that this to me was a prime example of no expectations can sometimes be the best expectations.
I agree, because this was the one I was sort of like, yeah, all right, it's here. I know Universal is big on like Halloween horror nights, and they wanted to do like classic Hollywood horror movies, Frankenstein and stuff, but like the other three I'm definitely more excited about. Even the names, like Dark Universe, it's like the whole place is Epic Universe and this is Dark Universe. Like, this is like, it feels like a clunky title to me.
Sure. Yeah.
But let me just tell you, don't skip it, because it was actually so fun.
It was super, super neat. Yeah. There's like a take on like a Frankenstein story.
Yeah.
And so there's like a whole ride that kind of like takes you through like Dr. Frankenstein's like great, great granddaughter or something like that is now sort of like doing her version of Frankenstein. And it's like, you know, you get to see a lot of the classic like horror villainy type of characters, Dracula and
the Wolfman and the swamp creature and the Invisible Man and the Mummy and stuff like that.
Yes. So without going into like any spoilers, it's a really good story. Like going and interacting on the ride, it's sort of like, you know, you're not in it for a huge amount of time or anything like that, but when you get to the end, like, you consumed a complete start to finish story that is satisfying. And I think that this is a ride that people might sleep on a little bit, but I would say it's like in the, like, as far as Epic Universe is concerned, I would say it's like top three.
I would agree with that. It was like way better than I expected it to be. We actually ended up doing it twice, and we were riding it with the guys from New Rockstars.
Yes.
Eric Voss and Brandon.
Yep.
And we all switched seats and stuff, so we got like different experiences the second time around.
You know, we should have got the photo from that one, because that was so fun to be like hanging out with those guys who were, they are just awesome.
They're great. Yeah. Yeah.
delightful people.
Yeah.
But yeah, that was really neat. It was like we got in line and we just started like chatting, and it was just like old friends.
Yeah.
You know, like everything. It was like, this is so easy.
You guys did the same thing as us.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
So that was really cool. Yeah. So getting to hang with the new rock stars was fun. And then when we popped out, they have another roller coaster in Dark Universe called Curse of the Werewolf, which is a very interesting build for a roller coaster.
It is.
Because they are very similar to like the being able to spin on that Hiccup's Wing Glider experience. The carts themselves are just
free floating. They will spin as they see fit.
And it seems like the weight ratio of your specific car is going to dictate what your experience is like.
Yep.
Because we rode in the front, middle, and back to try to see which one would spin the most. And we had about the same experience in all three.
Yes, we did.
And I think that in all three cases, it was just us two in the cart sitting side by side. So I think that maybe like our weights were similar enough that we were fairly balanced and we weren't spinning a lot.
Yeah.
But like some people get out there and they are like whipping.
Yeah. Like on our first ride through, we were like in the middle, and the people in front of us who were actually from MuggleNet.
Yes.
another website we've collaborated with before. We were just like waving at them, and man, I don't know what their weight ratio was, but they had four people in their cart. And the way it is just like, it's like a circular cart, and there's two people facing forward and two people facing backwards. And then once you get going, you'll just start spinning and stuff.
Yeah.
But like their cart was spinning.
It was. Yeah. It was going. And it's like a cool ride because like it's designed in such a way to sort of like give opportunity for different carts to spin in different ways based on like where you are and like how it's, you know, rocketing back and forth and stuff like that. But the other thing I would say about it is that like if you've ever done like a spinning teacups ride before, where you're basically like in a vessel that's spinning in circles while you're on like a platform that's spinning in circles on top of a larger platform that's spinning in circles, you get off of it and you kind of want to puke.
Right.
And so I was like, man, I don't know. Like, you know, this is a lot of spinning.
Right.
While also on a roller coaster. And we did it three times in a row and I felt completely fine.
Totally fine.
Yeah.
Yep.
No issues. So I don't know if it's just like really good ride design. Maybe it was because we weren't getting like the like a crazy amount of like, you know, gyroscopic energy.
Yeah, could be. But yeah, we did it three times. The only thing like, and I mean, it was super fun. Like definitely go to the back there and do this ride in particular because it was like, it's so unique, the spinning part of it. And if you feel like, yeah, you're going to get like nauseous or something, like we didn't.
No, yeah, at least, not, yeah.
You know? And I was also a little bit worried about it because it was like, you know, first thing in the morning. We were like,
yes, yeah.
Yeah.
Not necessarily like a lot in your stomach yet. And, you know, like kind of getting things rolling. But so yeah, that's totally like a plus one for that one.
Yeah.
And then when you walk out there, they have like a really cool, it kind of reminds me if you've been to like Diagon Alley and there's like the dragon up on top of Gringotts, you know, that like every 15 minutes or so, it will like blow flames. There is what's called the Burning Tavern, and it's basically got like a giant like windmill on top, and every 15 minutes, the windmill will catch on fire. And so it looks like this giant like charred piece of structure.
Yeah.
Really cool looking, very like kind of got like spooky vibes. But then when you walk into the tavern, I swear to you, if you've heard of us like go on and on and on about Name of the Wind, like the inside of the tavern is exactly what I picture Quoth's tavern to look like.
Yes, like, minus all like the monster heads on the walls.
Minus all the monster heads. But otherwise, like, I mean, if I were building a set design, like it is so not far off from what I just picture of the inside of that the inn to look like, the Waystone Inn. I was like, whoa, that's so cool. Like I'm having like a different kind of like fandom experience that isn't even intended, but is great less than none. Then we got mocktails that came in these really cool
like potion bottles.
Yep. Yep. And it was that was really fun because we were like, okay, our kids are gonna love these potion bottles.
And they did.
Yes, they absolutely did.
Mine did. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, the first thing I did, you know, I got like Addie like all these like little knickknacks and stuff, and the first thing she wanted was milk out of her potion bottle. So I was like, perfect. I'm glad it was worth the effort of finding a way to cram this in my suitcase.
Luke went upstairs immediately. I was like, you can make potions with it in the bath, and he just took off upstairs. And like I came up there like 5 minutes later and he had put three bath bombs inside the single potions bottle.
Wow.
And typically we would maybe use two for like an entire bathtub, you know.
Yeah.
So it was overflowing. But he still has the potion in his room now. So I'm like, okay,
there you go.
Please don't spill.
Yeah. But yeah, so that was fun, and it had like, you know, like glitter and stuff like in the potion. Yeah. So like if you go out, like hold it in the sunlight. Again, just it's a great job of creating something that becomes very like Instagrammable.
Yeah, it was very Instagrammable for sure.
If you see other people holding them, you're going to be like, where'd you get that? They're going to tell you to go over there. Then you're going to want to watch the thing catch on fire. And then once you watch it catch on fire, you want to go inside and buy one. So,
exactly.
Yeah, they definitely have engineered the experience, I think, in a way that works out quite well.
Yeah. And then we got some food there as well at a place called Das Steakhouse, but steak, STAKE, like, you know, how you might kill a vampire or something.
Like a wooden steak.
Like a wooden steak. Yeah.
This place was cool. Jay and I, like, we should have been more strategic, but we wanted the same food, and we got the same food.
We got the same food.
That food was good.
It was good. We also sat at, like, what I thought was going to be, like, well, no one's going to see us here, but it turned out to be the most high-trafficked area in the building, because I think every 3 minutes... new people we met from the trip were like, hey, it's you guys.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so we're sitting there eating these like chicken wings, which were great. You know, like great sauce, all the stuff. And it came with like a skull shaped cornbread.
Cornbread, not so good.
Yeah. That was me. But like, you know how like they would say, like, you know, like don't eat like chicken wings like on a first date? Well, that was exactly what was happening. So Jay and I are sitting there with our hands just covered in, you know, meal slop. And, you know, all these people who are, you know, like whatever, you know, they all have channels of their own and their own prominence and like whatever, and you're sort of like, hey,
yeah, don't mind me, I hope my hand just came at the wrong time.
Do you have a wet nap perchance?
Yeah. Hold on.
Yeah.
Never mind.
Yeah.
Yeah. But so, yeah, we got out of it. It was fine. No one seemed that bothered by it.
No. I just thought it was funny. I was like, this is so like the classic, you know, like, you know, like try not to eat like a messy food while you're trying to make a good impression type situation. Yeah. You're like talking to all these people and you're like, just hands covered in sauce. Yeah. And stuff.
Sorry about that, guys.
Yeah. But it was really funny.
But the food was really good.
It made me feel good that everybody wanted to stop and talk to us.
I know. Yeah. It was just like, oh my god, we did, like, because you go in there and you like, you don't know who's gonna be down there, and then you just end up meeting so many people, and everyone was so nice. So that was really good crowd of people to be down there with overall.
Yes absolutely.
We got to hang out with our buddy Jake the Viking a bunch. He was down there.
That was really cool. It worked out really well.
It worked out good,
you know. But yeah, it's got like this like summer camp kind of feel to it, where it's like on day one it's like, you know, the people that you know, and like they are like your like safety touchstones, where it's sort of like, okay, like I know you, so I'm gonna stand here and like,
you
know,
and chat with you.
And then like throughout the course of the week, you'll like invariably like sit next to somebody on a ride, or you'll be like, you know, waiting in line with people, and you like, or sitting next to them at like a meal or whatever. You kind of like get like the stories from everybody, and then like you've had these touchstones, and you all like, I think everybody is having like kind of the same experience, where like everybody wants to know more of the people that are there, but like it almost requires you to like break the ice. But then like once you've broken the ice, it's like, hey, now we know each other from that thing.
Yeah. And like everyone has the same thing in common, which is that they like, you know, work in social media or, you know, or more traditional media or some kind of space like that.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. So very cool. Anyway, but so then that brings us to our last of the portals.
Yes.
At Epic Universe, which is going to be the Ministry of Magic.
Yes.
And obviously that we saved this one for last, you know, because we're big HP people.
Indeed.
But the ministry was really cool for a lot of reasons. But one of the big things at each of the openings of the portals was they had like some big celebration. You know, like to sort of like kick it off for the first time.
Yeah, and so to open the gate.
To open the gate. So each of the respective worlds, this was the last one that we ended up doing, but it was also the one that, you know, we were really there for when it really came down to it. Like this is why we were invited in the first place. So, you know, it's like upper 90 degrees. We go over, we get in line like an hour before the portal even opens, because
we had been at the back of pretty much every other opening.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. But this one we wanted to be up there. So we're just standing in like the blistering hot sun.
Yeah.
You know, just waiting and waiting and waiting. And finally the moment arrives, I think 15 minutes later than we thought that it did.
I know, which
is a long 15 minutes.
It is a
minutes.
Long 15 minutes when it's 90 degrees outside. Yeah. But like we were literally like before that, eating some lunch after our chicken wings. And we were like it's like an hour before it opens. Like, should we go over now? And it was like, I really don't want to go out in the heat. And it's like, yeah, but like we need to be in the front row. Like we're just going to have to knuckle down and just like bear the heat. It's going to suck, but we're just going to have to do it. And like, that's exactly what we did.
Yeah.
And I mean, it was hot.
It was hot. I mean, I was dripping all sorts of sweat, but
yeah.
Then it ended up being worth it because, you know, like they do the big celebration. We got to see, a demiguise like in full costume, like from the Fantastic Beasts come out. And I mean the costume, which you can see in the park somewhere, is incredible. Like these bright purple eyes. I mean, like the person who's inside of it is clearly like mastered all of like the little like isms yeah. about how this creature moves. Like you're just like, I'm looking at Dougal the demiguise.
Exactly.
So that was really cool. And then the Weasley twins walked out with Warwick Davis.
Yes.
So
James and Oliver Phelps.
Yep.
Yep.
Exactly. Yep. So that was really cool. So we got to like front row, like as you know, they're like standing like right.
Yeah. Now, you're like, oh my God. Gosh, there they are. Look at you guys. Yes.
Like, can I give you a high five? No, that's okay. That's okay.
We'll see you guys.
Catch you next time.
Yeah.
But yes, that was really fun. And we got to race in and we immediately went to the Ministry of Magic.
Yep, for the Battle of the Ministry ride.
Yes, which is telling the backstory of what happens to Dolores Umbridge
yes.
after the Battle of Hogwarts.
Yes.
So it's kind of like what's going on there. We won't go into any of the major spoilers, but we did make a video for it over on Super Carlin Brothers if you want to check yes. that out.
That's live now. It's actually going to go up later today as we record this.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
But like the really, really cool thing about it, because when you walk into the Ministry of Magic, you're actually in like the French area, like Paris, from the Crimes of Grindelwald
right.
movie, where like the Cirque Arcanus is, that like Nagini comes from. You can go to like the entrance to like the French Ministry of Magic, but you don't actually go into the French Ministry of Magic. The ride is actually like going and getting in a queue, and you go through like a flu powder experience, and you enter the British Ministry of Magic.
Yeah.
Like sort of in what we would regard as like the modern era for Harry, which is actually like 1998.
Yeah. So it's a little confusing that you walk into like 1920s France and then like go to 1990s London.
Yes. It's a little bit strange. And I think that like in campus explanation, it's like, flu powder. And it's like, yeah, but flu powder doesn't travel you through time. So it's like, but you know, it's like, what? That's okay. You know, I mean, I think that is us being like Harry Potter nerds, being nitpicky about
yeah.
like something very small that I think most people aren't going to be fussed with in any way, shape, or form.
Yeah.
Especially because once you enter the Ministry of Magic, like where Voldemort and Dumbledore had like their massive duel in Order of the Phoenix, like it is incredible.
Spot
like,
on.
I mean, this was like the tears out of my eyes moment. This was like the like, holy cow. Like, I mean, you're like, I'm there.
Yeah.
You know, and then behind you, like there's the green puffs of smoke that keep lighting up as like more and more people keep funneling in. I mean,
yep.
The whole thing just feels like you're there.
Yeah.
You know, and there's the giant magical brethren statue, like the golden centaur, goblin, house elf, and wizard. And, you know, it's like, I mean, just the space is perfect.
It's great.
Yeah.
Yeah. The space is great. I will say, so pro tip, like when you go, you're going to have to wait in line to get the part where you do the flu powder thing.
Yep.
And then once you're through the flu powder, you'll be like in a second, you're in that atrium area where like clearly tons of people are just like taking pictures and doing stuff. And like wandering around, taking in the space. If you really, really want to like, you know, maximize your line time, like wait until after you get off the ride to do the atrium stuff.
Yeah.
Because if you just go through the flu powder and make a beeline for the queue, you can probably just like get in front of a ton of people.
That's true. Because lots of people are going to pop out and just like take pictures and walk around and yeah. sort of just like absorb that the space has.
Yeah. But
the end of the ride exits back into that space. So then just ride the ride and then experience
right.
everything that it has to offer. Which is, yeah, definitely. That's a great pro tip. I suspect the way time for this ride is going to be a beat.
That is also true. I suspect the wait time is going to be north of like 4 hours for a hot second here.
Yeah. But what I think that this ride mastered so well is that you've probably, if you've done any theme parks before, there's a kind of ride. Like we talked about the Roller Coaster Tycoon, like the hang down ride or like the standing roller coaster, whatever. The kind of ride that you're experiencing is one where you've sort of got like animatronics up in front of you that are like interacting. It's sort of like a three-dimensional feel to the space that you're in. And then behind it is like a giant screen that is then got like further depth that is then showing you more of like what's happening inside of the scene that you're watching unfold. But the screens that they have are 8K screens, and they are absolutely massive.
They're like 50 feet tall. They are huge. Someone, we have not fact checked this, but I wouldn't be surprised if it's true, was telling us that like the biggest LED screen in the world is the Sphere in Las Vegas.
Yeah.
But the second, third, and fourth ones are all on this ride.
Yes.
Yeah.
So that's like a detail that somebody was like, I don't know if this is true, but this is what I heard. And so we were like, I mean, but it would make sense.
It would make sense.
Based on what you're seeing.
Even if it's not true, the screens are massive.
Yeah. And they are so ridiculously crisp that I think it is doing the best job of any ride like this I've ever seen. Of layering the scene with real animatronic 3D things that are happening within a scene that actually has depth behind it and actually makes you feel like you are looking into this massive space.
Yeah.
So it's super immersive in that way. It's really cool. You're getting brand new Harry Potter lore that we haven't had anywhere else before.
Yeah, that's really kind of the cool part too, because like when you do like the Gringotts ride, for example, you're sort of like in the middle of Harry, Ron, and Hermione breaking into Gringotts. So it's sort of like, you sort of get the feeling, it's like, it's fun to be there and watch it and do the ride, but like, clearly this is, you know, a take on what happened because, you know, you've read the book and Voldemort's not down there and Bellatrix isn't down there or anything.
And Bill's not down there.
Bill's not down there.
They're like, what are you gosh doing here?
Yeah. But this on the other hand is new lore. This is an unexplored space and time inside of the Harry Potter universe. And like, we were sort of looking it up and it's like the theme parks, are like considered a certain level of canon. Like you've got like the books first and then you've got like the articles and interviews and stuff for like Pottermore. And then you've got like the movies and the theme parks. And then below that, you've got like the video games. So like I would, so and all of that's only true. It's like, it's only, you know, adds to the canon if it doesn't contradict things higher above it. So like there's nothing contradicting anything that happens on the ride. So in a way you are getting like brand new lore for Harry Potter, which is pretty rare these days.
It is pretty rare. Yeah. So that was really cool. It's just like an overall very cool experience. My one like kind of critique of it would be, that you'll get to the end of the ride and you'll sort of like see the conclusion of the story, which I won't go into, but then as you're exiting, it's almost as if there's like a photographer there to like witness your, like it's almost as if there's like a photographer there in the same way that there would be a photographer at outside of like a courthouse taking pictures of the people like exiting or whatever. And that is when the in-ride photo happens. And so like our in-ride photo that we got, like we're all just sitting there kind of like blank faced.
Yeah. Cause like, oh, the ride's over.
It's not like a thrilling part moment of the ride. So you're not like gasping, you're not like, whoa, you know, it's sort of like okay, here's the conclusion and now we're taking you back to the exit, boom, in ride photo. And it's sort of like,
yeah,
so like we literally got in the second time that we did it, we knew it was coming, so we made like all, you know, like funny faces and thumbs up and, you know, did all this fun stuff. But the first time we bought the picture, because, you know, they actually date the picture, which is kind of cool. So it comes in this like cool, like newspaper looking thing. And then that way, you know, especially for us, because we were there the day before opening day, it's like, haha.
Yeah.
Our date is before it opened.
Yeah.
But literally the picture is just every single person on the ride just sitting blank faced.
Yeah.
And it's not because the ride isn't engaging. The ride photo is just at a weird spot.
Yeah. Well, it's everyone except Jake, who was riding the ride with us, with his friend Tyler, and they had actually like somehow snuck onto the ride the day before. I don't know how they did that.
I don't know either.
But they knew where it was going to be, so they were ready.
Yeah. So they were being silly. But, just them.
Whatever.
So, anyway, so that would be like the little thing there is just to be aware when the story is concluded, get your game face on.
Get your game on.
That's when it's about to happen.
Right, exactly.
Because the picture's otherwise very cool.
Yeah. Oh, speaking of like grand opening things, one of the fun things, because we're that I'll just mention here at the end, is that, well, we have more to talk about, but like each park had like a grand opening pin you could get.
Aha.
And so me and Ben, of course, were like, oh man, we got to get the grand opening pins for everywhere.
Oh, yes, yes. So now we have a pin for each of the different lands that says like opening day on the bottom.
And I was like, ha-ha. I know, we got like the full set. And man, I was like, I put up a new pin board in my house over the weekend just so I had a place to display these.
Oh, that's great. That's so
great.
Yeah,
and I was like, oh, I'm so happy with these. Like, it feels like such like a, we were there and we did a thing and we got them all and like we had the full set. And yeah, so I was pretty excited about that.
That is very
cool. So we got those, and then let's see. The only other thing we did was the Cirque Arcanus show, which, so this is sort of the thing about the Ministry of Magic Land in Harry Potter, is that there's really like just like two things to do.
Yeah.
You know, there's like the ride and then the show. And then there's like, you know, a few restaurants if you want to get like a butterbeer or something like that. And there's some like interactive portraits and like wand things you can do with like the shops, kind of like the other ones. I'd say the wand interaction stuff is like way more advanced and cooler than in the other lands.
I would agree with that. Yep. Yeah. Yep. And it seems to work really well too. And like the effects that you get are neat.
Yeah. Yeah. They're pretty cool. And then like there is like a, you know, some portraits where like they'll start talking to you through the window and stuff like that. And it's like clearly someone with a camera somewhere, because they'll like start, you know, like making fun of your shirt and stuff like that, or they'll be like, oh, do you have a wand, and like, you know, you can cast it, and like, you know, it's like a comedian back there. But I did that, and that was a really fun little experience. But the Cirque Arcanus show, this is more of a Fantastic Beast show, so you're kind of going to the Cirque Arcanus again.
Yes.
Which starts out with just like a regular circus performance, which you know, the performers are all really good at what they're doing. In particular, I had never seen this act before. And I, like, when I worked at the concert venue, we would have Cirque du Soleil come, and they would have all sorts of banana acts coming out on stage that would just blow your mind. Like, if Cirque du Soleil ever comes to your town, just go. It's so good. But they had someone come out, and they did, like bubble juggling, like bubble tricks.
It was really neat.
I have never seen anything like it.
Yes, it's almost like they had these like two like cowboy holsters or something, you know, like worked into their costume that was just full of this like super thick bubble solution.
Yeah.
And they could just like reach their hands in and then like, you know, create like bubble art and magic and, you know, displays and stuff. And it's like, it for such a fickle like medium that is the delicacy of bubbles, to like watch them be able to handle them and manipulate them in a way that was so reliable was just like, whoa. So that's just a tiny portion of the overall circus experience that you are taking in.
Yeah.
And then there's like a really cool twist that happens inside of it, and you get to, you know, do things, but it's like I'm hesitant to say what it is.
Yeah.
Just, I mean, because I think people need to experience it and kind of have like their minds blown for the first time.
But I agree with that. Yeah. So, but go see it, the Cirque show and the Ministry ride in Harry Potter World. Both really good.
Yeah, and that's like one of the cool things too, though, is that like, you know, roller coasters are a product of, like we said, like the technology at the time or whatever. But then like when you get in and you have like real actors doing real things, it's like these are people who are like professionals at their craft, and they take a lot of pride in their work, and they do a great job at it.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think that's definitely something to like, yes, prioritize the shows, both of them in Burke, in Ministry. I would do both of them, and you will not be disappointed.
Yeah, I agree with that. And that just leaves us with one last thing to talk about, which is the roller coaster Stardust Racers, which is like the main attraction of the central hub, Celestial Park.
Yes. Yeah. So this is sort of going to be like the open air area, and Celestial Park is very like astrologically themed. Like, all of the you know, horses on like the carousel, for example, are all the different like zodiac signs. So there's like, you know, like a rabbit and like a bull or a Taurus or whatever, you know, like,
yeah.
You can go and like see all of those, you know, like little things is like what you would sit on. And then, Stardust Racers is really cool too, because it's a very action packed roller coaster. Like, this is high thrills. I would say, like,
it's like Velocicoaster range.
Exactly. Yeah. Yes. Yes. So if you can think of like the highest thrills that Universal has delivered so far, I would say it's more on par with that. But then it's also like a really cool, like, homage to Dueling Dragons.
Yeah.
Which is sort of like a very famous, now retired Universal roller coaster from back in the day. That was fun because they would both take off at the same time, and as you'd be like weaving through the ride itself, you're also like part of the experience is the fact that the other car is alongside you doing its own thing.
Yeah.
And this ride does exactly that, and it gets like they're so in tandem with one another that there's no way in the world you could actually do it. But like, it almost feels like if you planned it with your buddy who was going to be in the other cart, that you could like reach out and high five one another as you pass. Like, they feel that close.
I know. Yeah. I mean, it is really cool when the other cart is going with you. Cause we did it. We wanted to do it twice so we could ride like on there's a yellow like side and a green side. And we wanted to do both of them. And the first time we got up there, the green side wasn't working. So we were like, okay, we'll just do the yellow side. And we got in and we rode it without the other cart going. So it was just like a single experience. There wasn't like the dueling aspect of it. And then we were like, okay, well, let's get back on and see if we can get on the green side. And it was up and running at that point. And we were like, okay, awesome. We got like halfway through the line. And then they were like, the green side stopped working again. So then we had to get back on the yellow side. But then, hilariously, by the time we got back to the cart and got in it,
the green side was working again.
So we got to do it with both carts running. And like, I mean, it is better if the other cart is running, for sure.
It is. Yeah. It gives you such like a different kind of like perspective as to like the speed and the intensity and everything. Cause it's like you're both getting to watch the roller coaster unfold while experiencing the roller coaster at exactly the same time. And you're both doing the same things.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think probably when it really came down to it was probably my favorite ride at Epic. Especially from like a thrills perspective,
right? So if you like you know, high velocity, high thrill roller coasters, which is like my favorite kind of ride, then that's what you're gonna want,
right?
Yeah.
So overall, I mean, I really enjoyed it. There's a new resort as well, the Helios, which seems like it's going to be a hot commodity to get, because you can literally like essentially walk out the back doors
into the park.
Yeah. So I mean, it is like situated right there.
If you can, like if you've been to Magic Kingdom and you can imagine like the castle is sort of like the backdrop of the whole kingdom, like that is how the hotel is. It is like, it is sort of like it is there in the background the whole time.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, yeah. It's just as much a part of the park's landscape as the carousel or Stardust Racers, right, or anything else. So, it's definitely, I mean, it looks beautiful. We got to go into just the opening lobby of it. They had like a little like welcome situation there, but it looks beautiful and grand and gorgeous, and the styling is all spectacular.
Yeah.
So that'll be a fun one, like on the bucket list to eventually be able to stay there. I think I would really enjoy that.
I know. Yeah. The Helios is pretty cool. I imagine that one's going to be a pricey stay.
Yes.
But yeah.
Yeah.
But you can walk right into the park.
But you can walk right into the park. Yep. So it's got that going for it. So anyway, I mean, that was our experience, you know, at Epic Universe. It was such a fantastic time. I absolutely think that people are going to really enjoy what they get out of this park.
I think so. I don't think you're gonna be like disappointed going or anything, and you can definitely get like, you know, a full day's worth of it. I think like it's not like I wouldn't think of it as like, okay, I'm going to Epic Universe and I've only got like, am I going to spend the whole, like, don't plan your whole vacation around like one day in Isle of Berk, one day in Ministry of Magic, one day in, you know, Dark Universe. Like you can do a lot of stuff from all four parks in one day.
I think you could. Yeah. I mean, I would say that we got to do everything except for the carousel, which we could have done. We just didn't, in 2 days. So it, like, I could almost see a world where you could like partition it, especially with potentially longer wait times.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause we didn't have tremendous wait times.
Right. I could see like, you know, if you're going to go do Isle of Berk and Nintendo World and the next day do Dark Universe and Ministry. And,
right.
And then I think that you'll have the opportunity to thoroughly take it all in. And the food is so good. You're almost going to want a couple of days, I think, because that will give you the opportunity to be hungry enough to try things from everywhere.
That's true. That's true as well.
That's actually something that always gets me a little bit when we're on these trips, is just that it's sort of like I want to eat more and I physically can't.
I know that is a problem. Like whenever I go to Disney, it's like I have my favorite foods. Like I always want to get like the chicken and waffles.
Yes.
But then I'm like, I also want to try the other stuff too. And I'm like, but I'm so rarely at Disney World. So if I don't get it now, when will I get it? You know?
Yes, yeah. Exactly. I know. It's I feel horrible because it feels like it always reminds me of that scene from The Hunger Games when they're like at the Capitol.
And, yeah.
You know, people are like, you know, throwing up so they can eat more and stuff like that.
It's not like that.
Yeah. No. No. I mean, that's obviously taking it to the nth degree. But it is like one of those things where it's just like, oh, God. The food is also fun. It's just I want to be able to interact.
You want to try it.
Yeah.
I know.
Yeah, but there are limits, and also roller coasters and full bellies and roller coasters.
Full bellies and roller coasters, and everything's kind of expensive. And
maybe a little warm.
I know. Yeah, those other thing. I will say that like we didn't, you know, the food, the you know, the Instagram kind of food, like the floats and the cones and stuff, they were like just giving those out to us.
Yeah, that I think that they wanted us
because
the
they wanted people to like, you know, show them off and stuff like that. So take that with a grain of salt as well,
right?
Because otherwise it could, you know, it could add up.
Anyway, so that was our trip to Epic Universe. If you guys have any questions for us about the park or things that we didn't like properly touch on, be sure to just like let us know. We'd be happy to try to continue to provide some more information.
Absolutely.
It was there's so much to take in, and we've been going for an exceptionally long episode.
Yeah, this is a real long episode of the pop.
I know. So hopefully you guys enjoyed it. Be sure to let us know all of your thoughts. If you have any feedback, popcornculturepod@gmail.com. If you want to support the show, you can do so at patreon.com/popcornculture. Otherwise, until next time,
pop pop.
Today's episode was edited by Isabel Chrisley. Vaishon Brandon does our art. Catherine Stein is our production manager, and the show is hosted by me and Jonathan Carlin.